The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. It helps if I turn my camera on. What the hell? It's just a big comedy of errors. Who are we fooling, you know? Hi, I'm Jim Peters. It's 11:02 on the East Coast, 8:02 on the West Coast, and 10:02 here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I'm sitting. And this is another episode, I think number 37 of Jim Peters at Night. How you doing? I will learn to push the buttons correctly eventually. Oh, well. I hope you guys had a good day. I'm kind of low-key tonight. I don't know what the deal is. I was talking to my wife. I think it's barometric pressure. Nobody knows, you know, how come there are days when everybody seems tired, everybody. And there are days when that doesn't seem to happen. And I don't know what that is, but I think maybe it's the barometric pressure. I'm not actually sure. I don't really know. Okay, so tonight, our guest is Martha Zoller. She's an Atlanta radio talk show host, WDUN, in Gainesville, which is part of the Atlanta market. Wonderful woman, fabulous. I met her at the Talkers Convention in June. She was named Talkers Magazine Woman of the Year for this year, 2023. Talkers Magazine is the Bible, the industry trade publication for talk media in the U.S., both talk radio and talk television. And I have to tell you, so I was doing podcasting and radio shows for about 3 years. Nothing special, you know, I don't know. You know, I did it for my employer. And I had Michael Harrison, the publisher of Talkers Magazine and the founder of it. I asked him to be on my radio show and he agreed, and which surprised me because he doesn't know me from Adam. And we had a very nice conversation. And next thing you know, I get an invitation to the Talkers Convention. And the thing about that is that this convention is not open to the public. It's not even open for, registration. It's by an invitation only. Because they want to make sure everybody there is professionals. And apparently I'm a professional. That was pretty cool. I was very, very flattered. And I went. And I met Martha there. And we had a nice talk. Had a nice chat. I sat next to her for lunch or something like that. And I met a lot of nice people. And Harrison's been pretty good to me. I mean, he wrote that article in Talkers Magazine about the show before we started. Didn't ask him to do it. He just did it. It's pretty cool. Anyway, so Martha's going to be joining us later on. We pre-taped this interview because, all right, so like I said, I think this is our 37th show. And this is the middle of our 10th week. And actually, we're taking tomorrow off. So, you know, we're finishing up our 10th week of shows. And what I've learned so far is that people on the East Coast especially do not want to do live interviews at 11:30 at night. And I guess, you know, you can kind of understand. You know, especially all the people that we want to have on, they're basically hardworking professionals, and they need their beauty sleep, and I don't blame them. So we offer to everybody to pre-tape interviews in the afternoon. And right now, about at least half of the people we've had on the show have asked to do that. I mean, I don't know what the count is, but on the 37 shows we've done, we've had at least 24 guests so far. Now, you'll notice, and I'm going to read the list here in a second, we pretty much now, after 8 weeks, after 2 months on the air, we have pretty much now booked this, we have guests booked up basically 2 weeks at a time. And that's basically where I wanted it. And so I'm very happy about that. I'm trying to stay on top of things to entertain you, the viewer. You are the viewer. So, like I said, tonight, Martha Zoller, tomorrow. We're taking tomorrow off. I got a bunch of work. I'm not even getting into it. A bunch of work I got to accomplish. Monday, Larry Newman, bail bondsman, joining us. Now, this is the same Larry Newman, if you watch the show regularly, that comes on as a Bigfoot investigator. Same guy. But his daytime job, his real job, he's a bail bondsman, and he's going to talk about cashless bail in the United States, and God knows he has some strong opinions on this. So, and he's a great guy. I mean, he was on my radio shows previously. I met three dozen times at least. So, great guy, great guest. That's Monday. Tuesday, Eddie Scarry, who's very famous from Fox News and other news outlets. He's an author. He's coming on. We're going to talk mostly about his book, Liberal Misery, because he aligns with my theory that book aligns with my theory that the difference between conservatives and liberals is not actually political. It has to do with personality types. And then he wrote a book about it. It's a great book. Wednesday, Jeff Meyer, CEO of Kong News. He's going to be joining us. He always has something interesting to say. I think we have a guest booked for Thursday, but I haven't confirmed it, so I'm not going to talk about that. Now, I'm going back to the following week, October 30th. I'm taking the 30th off Monday because I have another dental appointment. Now, I had a dental appointment on a Tuesday about 3 weeks ago, I think it was, and I debated whether I should take it off, and I did, and I'm glad I did because this appointment is also in the late afternoon, as that one was, and I couldn't basically, but 10 o'clock rolled around, I still couldn't really talk. So I'm really glad I did that. So we're doing that again, especially because on Halloween, now I'm just putting this together. We're going to have a big bang up show, and we're going to run some advertisements on Rumble for this, all sorts of crap. We want you to call in with your costume on, and I'm going to have a bunch of people here, some of the regulars and stuff. We're all going to be in costume, and yeah, we're going to do this. It's good. I'm calling it the Halloween bullshit show, because we're not going to talk about anything important whatsoever. Matter of fact, I'm actually going to encourage the panelists to drink. It's going to be 11:30, 10:30 at night, wherever they are, you know, and all the kiddies have stopped Halloween trick-or-treating, so the adults are coming, and we've got our booze. And I want to, you know, you can put this on your calendar. I want you to call up with your costume and, you know, give us crap or whatever you want to do. We're not going to talk about anything the least bit important. It's the Halloween bullshit show. That's what it is. That's on Halloween. That fills out this month, believe it or not. So what happened today? Oh, before that, you know, I'm talking about you calling. So you see this right here, gymandnight.com/call. Now, the thing is, that's not the instructions for you to call in. You actually have to go to that webpage to click a button to call in. That's what you got to do. And this is the reason we got that article in Talkers Magazine in July, is because this is apparently, we're the first talk show in America to take video phone calls. So you click that button, you can end up in a preview screen where you can check your camera and mic or choose them if you have a multiple choice. And then you click the join button on the bottom, and you're in the queue, and I will put you on the air. Now, if you don't want your face on the screen, and I'm starting to realize a lot of people don't, because you're all trolling bastards, that's why. You know, everyone on the internet wants to be anonymous. Okay, fine. You know, I'm not fighting this. I think you're all whatever. If you don't want your face on the screen, on the pull-down or where you choose your camera, you can choose no video, and that will mute your camera. Now, you can't mute your mic. We got to at least hear what you have to say, you know. If you do mute your picture, I do appreciate it. I'd appreciate it a lot if that gives you the option to upload an avatar or a photograph to represent you on the screen. And since this is a visual medium, and, you know, I was talking to Martha, and I was talking to the King brothers. We got a lot of nice feedback on their interview last night. It was very cool. Robbie and David, who host that talk show out of their garage in Palo Alto, California. This I've been doing this now for, you know, 10 weeks, like I said, 2.5 months. I'm starting to realize more and more. Here's an analogy. When I was in my early 20s, I worked in Canada, and I'm an American citizen. I worked in Thunder Bay, Ontario, and I got a job there. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, it's like, you know, they speak English. It's like the 51st state of America. The longer I was there, the more I realized it was a foreign country. It's hard to explain because it's really subtle, but I did. By the time I was there for a year, by the time I left, I might as well have been in Switzerland, if you ask me. And the thing about doing this, you'd think, oh, Jesus, it's a radio show with a TV picture, you know? It isn't. I have a hard time explaining this. This is neither radio nor television. And it's really, really weird. Now, I don't know if you ever watched Dana Lash on, like, the First TV or on Twitter or something. So she does a radio show. It's syndicated. She's very successful. She's very talented. The woman does a fantastic show. And they have a video feed. They have her on camera. She doesn't really address the camera hardly ever. But and she goes out of her way, if you listen to her show on the radio, she goes out of her way to make certain everyone knows it's a radio show with a video feed, you know? So she has a cameras there, and apparently her husband, and they have directors, she has the best video feed of any radio show in America, my opinion. She actually has a little set, she has multiple cameras, they do a very, very good job. Still, it's a radio show with a video feed, and that's not what this is. And that's what I thought we were going to end up doing, you know, and I can't really explain the difference, although one of the differences is I address the camera constantly. At some point I'm doing interviews and people have asked me, Jim, why don't you look in the camera when you're doing the interviews? You're always looking down. Yeah, I'm looking at the monitor. I want to see how the person I'm interviewing is reacting. You know, now right now I have nothing to look at, so I might as well look at you, right? Okay? But if I have another person I'm talking to, I want to see them because to me, the interview is based on the back and forth of what they say and how they react. So that's the way I do this. But my point is that this is a completely different medium, and it's brand new, and nobody's really done this before. I mean, there are people who do this, and it's kind of like the Wright brothers. You know, there's a lot of debate on whether the Wright brothers actually were the first people who actually flew powered flight. You can come up with examples of people in France and stuff like that. That's not really the point. The point is the Wright brothers actually invented the airplane. That's the thing. It's not just that they you know, the first flight lasted 12 seconds. I mean, there might be a guy apparently in France or Russia. There's a guy in Russia who might have actually flown and actually might have gotten off the ground for 20 or 30 seconds. That might have happened. That's not the point. They invented the airplane. We're still using the shit they invented 120 years ago. That's the point. So there's a zillion people on Twitch doing what I'm doing right now. But the thing is, you know, they're not taking it seriously. And basically, they only have on their friends. So, you know, as far as a medium, I'm not going to make claim to the fact we're inventing anything. But I am very, very conscious of the fact that we're doing something that's brand new. I am. So, anyway, so now if you know the show, if you've watched before, it's basically in three parts. I do a little monologue here. I talk about the news of the day or whatever's on my mind. Last night, I kind of got off track. Matter of fact, I joked about the fact that I had to go grocery shopping after the show, and so I was going to cut it a little short, but we ended up being, it's one of the short, it was an hour, it was one of the shorter shows with a guest that we've ever done. That's the first part. Second part, we have a guest on. And third part, and the guests are usually 30 to 40 minutes. I think our interview with Martha is 25, I think. She had to go. She's a busy woman, you know. And also, it's 2:30 in the afternoon in Georgia, and she has to, you know, she has shit she has to do. So that's cool. I'm just grateful for the fact she spent some time with us. And the third part of this show, it's generally like scientific UFO paranormal news. And I have some of that tonight, mostly because, you know, I had a full show rundown last night, and I basically abandoned it. So why? Because I had to talk about love or something. I don't know, you know. But love is important, and my parting thought last night, I will start with this right now. Love your family, and try to love your family even if you don't agree with them or don't get along with them. Because the love and collectiveness of your family trumps almost anything else in the world can throw at you. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. So what happened today? Well, what happened last night while we were on the air, I think, a hospital in Gaza City got bombed. About 500 people died. And the terrible thing, like I mentioned last night, I think we did talk about this at the opening last night too, because I think it just happened. Not only did 500 people die, these people were already in the hospital for war injuries. So, what a way to go. Double whammy. You're already laying on a cot with a bunch of broken ribs or your face half blown off or whatever. And then, yeah, well, now we'll kill you. You know, shit. Terrible. Anyway, so that happened yesterday. And Israel was getting bombed or blamed for this attack. And not only did they refute that, they actually came up with very credible evidence. I mean, now, first of all, I wouldn't believe Hamas anyway, and a lot of people in the media have been saying this too. These people, they just lie. That's all they've been doing forever. They lie about everything. They use their own people as human shields. You know, the Israelis helped them put in some infrastructure to get water into Gaza, and they took the pipes and they made bomb launchers out of them. You know, they don't care about their people. They don't. All they care about is beating the crap out of Israel. Well, not the people, and you know, and it's true. You know, people said I'm not trying to stand up for Hamas here at all. There's a difference between the Palestinian people and Hamas. Now, they elected Hamas in 2005 or 2006. I can't remember. They haven't had an election since. Basically, Hamas has become a dictatorship. So, you know, you're wondering, how do they get out of that? Well, unfortunately, the only way they can get out of that is revolt, you know. But they don't care about their people. And so, you know, they're saying, you know, Israel bombed the hospital. Why would you believe them? And so today, Israel came up with a whole bunch of credible evidence, and especially an audio recording of communication between Hamas members, where one of them is explaining to the other one that we accidentally dropped a bomb in the hospital. So, you know, yeah, you can fake that, you can, but it's difficult, it's time-consuming, and, you know, we know they didn't have to. You know, that's all there is to it. There's a bunch of other evidence, too, the way the bomb blew up. And here's the amazing thing, and one of the IDF defense ministers has said this, about a third of the missiles launched from Gaza toward Israel fell on Gaza. About a third of them didn't work, misfired, because they're basically using homemade shit. They're using those aforementioned water pipes to launch bombs. Well, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think Israel has better bombs than that. So. So what else happened? Biden went over there today. And I really have to comment on this. I'm not the only, he looked terrible. He gave a press conference with Netanyahu, and he basically couldn't talk. I mean, I'm surprised this hasn't made the news more. It's the worst I've ever seen him. He stumbled around. He went on an Air Force One. He was literally stumbling around the airplane, trying to talk to reporters. He was incoherent, and his staff was furtively trying to get him to shut up and sit down. He made a fool out of himself. And okay, I'll say he didn't say anything per se that was, you know, outrageous or anything like that. He didn't. Although there's part of the press conference you literally can't understand what he's saying. He's mumbling. It's really, really bad. And the press, I don't know if the press is covering this up, but they're kind of like skirting it over. Even Fox News, the only place that really mentioned this on Fox News today was on The Five. They talked about this. You know, Gutfeld, he's talking about this all the time. And a couple other, but as a general rule, nobody brought this up. Now, he's going to give a speech to the American public tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern. And we're not doing a show tomorrow. So I will have a comment on that on Monday. I will assume, I mean, I'm not trying to be funny here. I actually think they fill his butt full of drugs, and he seems to be good when they do that for about 45 minutes. I'm not the only person I've noticed this. All those debates with Trump, all the speeches he's given, the State of the Unions, he seems to be pretty good, pretty alert for about 40 to 45 minutes, and then all of a sudden you watch him, you can literally physically see him crumble. I'm assuming he'll probably talk for about 15 minutes tomorrow because they can keep him alive and alert for that long, you know. This is really terrible, you know. Now, I've said, You know, if you ask me, and you're asking me because you're watching, the entire Biden administration has been a complete total disaster, except for one thing. So far, and I want to emphasize, so far, they have not fucked up the war in Ukraine. They haven't. Now, I'm still waiting for them to do this. And so I would say today, as of what's going on the last 10 days, 2 weeks, as far as like Israel and Hamas, so far, they have not fucked this up. They haven't. You know, you can quibble about what they're doing, all that sort of shit, but they have not fucked it up. I'm still waiting for them to do that. And also, this is the important point here, and I think everyone should remember this. This whole thing's happening because they perceive the United States as being weak. That's the reason. That's the reason all this shit's happening. So now they're talking about a second front on the war in the North. If that happens, we might be looking at World War III. I'm saying it straight out, you know. I mean, and if that happens, you know, like I said, even if they don't fuck up their reaction to it, it's happening because of their incompetence. So you got to keep that in mind. All right. I got some other stuff here, too. Looking at my list. I got a list. I got a little list. I use a little program here, and I keep track of stuff. I do have to mention this, too. So a bunch of protesters showed up at the Capitol today protesting for Palestine and against Israel, led by Representative Rashida Tlaib. This is a part, at some point, maybe I will get my shit together in here and start running clips of stuff, although it's very difficult because we have to license them. And so I don't want, you know, it's a much bigger pain in the ass than just actually running the video on the screen. It is. But she was Breitbart described her, here's the actual quote that Breitbart used, I'm quoting Breitbart, described her as sobbing and hysterical, and that's exactly what she was. She's talking to these people through a microphone, and she is screaming and crying, and she's nuts. She's nuts. And on top of that, she's wrong. She was still, well after it was determined that Israel did not actually launch this bomb that blew up the hospital, she was insisting that they did. And so I saw a tweet here, and then they entered the Capitol, the protesters, about 100 of them. It wasn't anywhere like January 6th per se, but here's the difference. You know, somebody said straight out, if you're a Republican and you enter the Capitol, you're an insurrectionist, and if you're a Democrat and enter the Capitol, you're a protester. That's the difference. Now, most of these people were led away by the Capitol Police. They were. Eventually, they gathered in the rotunda. I think it was Statuary Hall. I couldn't quite tell. And they eventually got led away. And, you know, like somebody on Fox News said, are they going to get actually charged? No, they won't get charged. They'll get thrown out of jail for a couple hours and they'll let up. No, it's not. Nothing happened, you know. You know, so unlike the people, you know, who went to who went January 6th, the Capitol Police maintained was the mastermind of January 6th. He's been sentenced to 20 years in prison. And this is the amazing thing, folks. He wasn't even there. He wasn't there, and he got sentenced to 20 years in prison. He did not show up, and he got sentenced to 20 years in prison. But if you're, you know, if you're protesting for Palestine, that's fine. We'll just let you out. Whatever. There's a poll today, and I can't remember who did it, that said that, the poll says that Trump and Biden are running neck and neck, but if you throw in Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., as a third-party candidate, he gets 16%, and the poll said that if that happens, Biden wins easily, that Kennedy draws more votes from Trump than Biden, and I don't buy it for a second. I don't. I would like to remind you about 2016, where virtually every poll was completely wrong. And I simply don't. I've said this, I'm still sticking to this. If Robert F. Kennedy is still on the ballot on election day next year, Biden will lose. I'm still sticking to that. I did not believe this at all. All right, so here's another story that really fascinates me. I'm going to read this headline from Breitbart. Victoria's Secret sales tank after hiring Megan Rapinoe as a brand ambassador. Okay, so yeah. So the story is about the fact that Victoria's Secret basically decided to go woke, and they hired, not only did they hire Megan Rapinoe, they hired these women with all sorts of different body types. In other words, they went completely away from the from the Secret's Angels thing they were doing for years and years. And remember, they did that fashion show on CBS that was basically porn. And that fascinated the hell out of me. Okay, so why is this on TV? Because these women are almost naked. That's why. Maybe not. All right, they're not actually naked, but they're almost naked. And you got a bunch of old pervy men like me. You're sitting at home in front of a TV screen. And I don't know if you've noticed this. Because of what's happening in our media landscape, the people who are watching broadcast TV are mostly old men now. You know, if you're 35, you're watching this or somebody, you know, or Glenn Greenwald or Russell Brand on Rumble. You're watching that, but if your dad, he's watching CBS. So they put this thing on TV. It was basically softcore porn. It got a shitload of viewers every year and a mountain of complaints. It's like, apparently, I read that the last year they ran it, which was, I think, three, four years ago or something like that, the FCC was deluged with complaints about this. How dare they put this smut on television? I don't know why I'm laughing, because it fascinates me. It really does. And, you know, I don't mind. I'm fine with it. You want to put naked girls on TV? I'm fine with it. I'll watch. So anyway, they stopped doing that because they thought, I have a quote here from this article because it's really amazing. This was the quote. The brand's efforts to promote inclusivity gained favorable reviews from online critics, but never translated into sales. No shit. What the hell are you thinking? It's like, you know, this is the part I don't understand from a purely commercial point of view. All these companies do this, Bud Light, Disney, they all do this, and their sales tank, and they wonder why. And I'll tell you why. It's simple. I can wrap this up in 2 seconds. You've ignored your core audience. You just went against your core audience. Bud Light, who drinks Bud Light? You know, working class men, middle-aged men in the United States. And not only that, everyone who drinks beer knows, yeah, you know, the beers are pretty good. Bud Light's pretty good. But there's at least half a dozen other light beers that are basically just as good. They might not taste exactly the same, but they get the job done, right? So it's very, very easy to go to the liquor store or the grocery store and not buy a case of Bud Light. It's very easy. And apparently they forgot this, you know? And so Victoria's Secret's decided they're going to sell lingerie. I'm going to be perfectly blunt here, and you can call me a sexist bastard. They decide they're going to sell lingerie by featuring fat chicks. No, it's not going to work. Because every woman has, it's an aspirational thing. You want to look like, Gisele Bündchen. You know, in your mind, you think, if I wear that, I might even not look that good, but I can look better. That's the idea. It's all aspirational stuff. I'm not, you know, this is not a sexist thing. This is just marketing. You know, and it's the same with Victoria's Secret as it is with Bud Light and Disney. And now Disney, you know, this was in the news the other day, too. Disney says that they're going to, that in response to the fact that the visits to their theme parks are tanking, they're going to raise the rates 21%. So, and am I the only person who pointed this out? So you're having trouble getting to the people to the theme parks, and your solution for this is to raise the rates. No, it's not going to work. Now, there's a caveat here. If Disney does have some obsessive fans, and they're not kids, they're adults. You know, I think it's nuts. I know a lot of other people think it's nuts. I got a good friend of mine who loves going to Disney. God bless her. As a matter of fact, she's going next week. You know, okay, fine. You know, I think it's crazy. But the thing is, those people are out there, and they're very, very passionate about their Disney experiences. Those people keep on going. They will keep on going no matter what Disney charges. So you could make an argument, since you've got a core audience that does not care about the actual price of the ticket or how much this experience costs them, you're going to get them anyway. So maybe you might actually make up for the sales by raising the price. This is a different thing from the Bud Light or the Victoria's Secret thing. Because now you're not ignoring your core audience. Now, maybe you're pissing them off a little bit, but the fact of the matter is you're not really ignoring them. You're not putting the middle finger into their face. You're not. So that might actually work for them, but still, you stop and think about it. Well, that's a unique solution for a problem about where not people showing up. You know, I don't know if you follow this. Disney's stock has tanked, like, in the last 5 years. It's gone down, like, 60-70%, if I'm right. I mean, it was, like, a high of $200. The last I heard, it's 80. It might even be less now. I don't even know. That's because almost every movie they put out in the last 2 years has bombed. Almost everyone. You know? And a lot of people say, John Nolte at Breitbart, he's a huge movie fan. He's basically the movie critic. He says, well, if you're going to stick in, I don't know what movie it is, because I don't go to any of these. I completely lost track of the Star Wars thing years ago. Don't give a shit. Here's my deal on this. Now, you know, I'm old enough to remember. I went to the premiere of Star Wars in 1977. How old would I have been? 23. I was 23. I'm a fucking old man. And, you know, and everyone who went got completely blown away. Because you have to understand this. First of all, there was no CGI to speak of. But all the special effects in every movies up to that point was cheesy and unbelievable. You know, okay, so you just accepted it because that was the best they could do. It was the first movie where they actually seemed to portray realistically people flying around in space. And I still remember this. And I watched Star Wars, the original Star Wars, which is called Episode 4 now, I think. But the original one I watched on late night TV about 2 years ago or something like that. But this is what I was taken by. The special effects still hold up. That was a really amazing thing. It still looks gorgeous. Other than that, it's a really bad movie. You know, when people made fun of George Lucas's inability to write dialogue for years and years and years. But no, he can't. I got to say, it's kind of, you know, his goal there was to do a really classy, like, after-B matinee movie type thing that he remembered from his youth. And that is actually kind of what it is. It's a really classy movie version of those bad movies. It's still a bad movie, you know. Now, I never saw Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. I never saw it because everyone says that's by far the best Star Wars movie ever. So I've never seen it. But since then, I did see Episode 1 and 2. I still remember sitting in the theater with Episode 1 and with Natalie Portman was on. And I still remember, I'm thinking, my God, this is awful. It hit me about an hour of the way through it. And it's like, movie is really, really bad. It's like, oh, that was the one with Jar Jar Binks, I think, or whatever it was. It's like, what the fuck? What are these people doing? And these movies have basically never been that good since. So I stopped watching, you know. And then they got the Marvel Universe and all this crap, superheroes, you know. I want to point out superheroes aren't real. Anyway, yeah, so yeah, I said that the reason that you can't sell a lingerie with fat chicks, I'm sorry, but it's true. You just got to come to terms with that. That's all there is to it. I'm not going to sit here, I'm going to apologize. Yeah, it was a rude thing for me to say. It's a crude thing for me to say, but I am getting right to the point, okay? All right, we're going to run our interview with Martha Zoller now. So, here she is. She does the mid-morning stint. I was going to say shtick on WDUN in Gainesville, Atlanta, and she's a wonderful woman. And trust me, you will like this. So here we go. Joining us from Gainesville, Georgia, the beautiful and immensely talented Martha Zoller. How you doing, Martha?
Great. It's good to be with you.
Yes, nice to see you again. We met at the Talkers Convention in June. You were named Talkers Magazine's Woman of the Year for 2023. Pretty big honor. I do have a question. So the actual award is called the Judy Jarvis Memorial Award for Outstanding Achievement in Talk Media by a Woman. Who's Judy Jarvis?
Judy Jarvis was one of the pioneers of our business. I mean, she was one and have her own radio show. And she really broke, you know, kind of broke the glass ceiling on that one. So she, it was a person to live up to.
That's pretty cool. Okay, so here's my first question. Did you come out of the womb as a conservative? There's a lot of people who didn't, especially women. What's your timeline on that?
Well, I think I've always been conservative, but I grew up in the South, and until the 1980s, you really didn't have an opportunity to vote if you voted Republican, meaning that there were a lot of races that didn't have Republicans. Southern Democrats were more conservative than the rest of the Democrats, and so I voted Democrat mostly until about 1988, and I was having this feeling that I was a conservative and I was a Republican because I had moved into Newt Gingrich's district, and I had started thinking, wow, you know, my values really don't fit with this. But at that time, the Democratic Convention was in Atlanta, and so I'm sort of a find out from the inside kind of person. So I volunteered for the Democratic Convention in Atlanta. And ironically, because I had an American-made car and I was a woman, I got to drive Kitty Dukakis, who was the wife of the nominee, who ended up being the nominee in 1988.
Yeah.
And so I got to be really inside in the whole workings of that Democratic convention. And at the end of it, it was a great experience, don't get me wrong. But at the end of it, I was like, I don't fit here. You know, I am not I don't believe these things. I don't hate people that are successful. At a 27-year-old, I was 27 at the time. And if you're thinking that these people don't, they just want to go after people who are successful. I want to be successful one day. I don't line up with these values.
That's
and
really
then
important.
Later, I got married and got pregnant and saw my first sonogram. And at that moment, I was never really pro-choice, but I didn't think it was any of my business. Mm-hmm. And then when I saw that first sonogram and the heart beating in that little tadpole, I realized I had been wrong in not caring about that issue. And so that's kind of where that came from. And then I started listening to talk radio. And from that, I started being a caller. And then from that, I ended up with a radio career.
So I was kind of asleep politically in 1988. So even then, you thought the Democrats were against achievement or success?
Yes.
Huh. And then, and the other thing is, so you're talking about, you referring back to what you're talking about, you're referring to what they used to call blue dog Democrats, right?
Right.
What happened with that? They kind of went away, didn't they?
Yeah, they switched parties. Or they ended up, you know, at this point dying. You know, I mean, they weren't around anymore. What originally started is Lyndon Johnson was part of that group initially. And then he, in 1958, realized that if Democrats did not get the black vote, because up until that point, blacks were voting mostly Republican because Republicans were the party of freeing the slaves. So in 1958, he started really recruiting black votes. And by 1960, and John Kennedy, African Americans were voting overwhelmingly Democrat. They went from voting Republican when they could vote. I mean, granted, there were lots of problems with black folks voting in the South and other places. But, you know, it was just one of those things. And really, when you go back and you look, I listen to John Kennedy's inaugural address a lot, because I think that, first of all, he couldn't get elected in the Democratic Party today because he was a low tax immigration. He was stricter on that. He talked about in his first inaugural address about caring for our hemisphere. And you think about, had he not died, and if we had put more focus on South America and Central America and developing their economies, would we not be in a better place today? I mean, for a minute, we shifted the textile industry to Central America, but then we went to China almost immediately. And, you know, I was a buyer at the time at Rich's, so I was part of one of the people that, or the groups of people that were doing business with China in the beginning. And China was always the worst to do business with. Even back then, they were just cheap. And all we wanted was cheap goods. And we have paid a very high price for low prices.
I'm skipping ahead here. Do you think Biden's on the take with China?
I think that he is compromised as it relates to China, Ukraine, and Romania. Those are three countries that it appears that he has taken, you know, money from.
Yeah.
And I do believe he's compromised. I don't know how involved he was in any of the decisions, and that's going to come out. Okay. But there is no doubt in my mind that the things that are happening today would not be happening under a different administration. I know that former President Trump likes to say it's him, but I just think it's because Biden is compromised. It doesn't matter who the person would be. There wouldn't be as many problems today if it wasn't Joe Biden.
All right. You brought up Donald Trump. In doing research for this interview, I came across an article on Yahoo News where you were quoted about the fact that you used to be a Trump supporter and aren't anymore. But before we talk about that, I want to tell you, I was interviewed. I went to New York City. I was on a panel on Yahoo News on their streaming service in 2014, 9 years ago. The interesting thing about being in that building, it was right off Bryant Park. I don't know where it is now. Other than the receptionist, I didn't see a single person in that building over the age of 35. It was basically like college campus. It was unbelievable. And the woman who interviewed me, she's basically a beauty queen, and she did not give a rip about the subject. I can't tell you how bad an experience this was. But regarding the article itself, so where do you stand on Mr. Trump right now?
Well, I voted for him twice. I gave money to him in the last election. I am open for the primary, though. I'm not anti-Trump. If he's the nominee, then I will support him, and it looks more and more like he's going to be the nominee. Mm-hmm. But I believe we need somebody younger. It doesn't matter whether it's Trump or Biden. I believe we need better equipped people that aren't close to 80 or older. And I believe that we need somebody who can actually be two terms. Also, I'm the daughter of a POW, and I voted for him twice, even though he made... You know, he denies making the comments about John McCain, and maybe he didn't. It's the typical way he makes comments, you know, where he says, well, I don't like guys that have been shot down, or I don't like people that have been captured. He just didn't need to do that. And even with that, I voted for him twice. Okay. Yeah. Even though my dad was the POW, I just don't want the chaos anymore. I'm one of those suburban and exurban women who vote Republican who are looking. And it's not because I'm pro-choice, because I'm not. It's that I don't like the dialogue. Now, if he's the nominee, and you know, one thing I appreciate about the former president is he had an interview with Bret Baier where he was asked this question that I just posed. You've got these suburban and exurban women who don't like your style, okay, and think you need to be less confrontational. What should you do to get those folks back? And he answered it, I think, the most honest answer he ever gave. He said, you know I need to be less controversial, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but I just can't do it. So at least he's honest about that. I mean, yeah. I can handle that. My dad was a New Yorker. I know that from the minute he came from Staten Island to Manhattan and started doing real estate deals, he has been fighting. Okay. He's been fighting. So. Right. I get his good qualities. All right. I get his good qualities. I just think we need somebody different, like a DeSantis or a Haley or Tim Scott. And even though I know the average Trump supporter hates Chris Christie, but what I love about Chris Christie is he knows he has no chance, but he is willing to burn the house down to say what he thinks is the right thing to say. So it's a lot of fun watching him.
I'm a paranoid conspiracy theorist. So you tell me what you think about this. My theory is that somebody is paying Chris Christie to run for president, because his only platform seems to be bashing Trump. He seems to have no other ideas at all. And that just seems kind of weird to me. So you ran for Congress, and you're way more connected politically than I am. Oh, first of all, I have to ask you this. So, you know, I'm in Minneapolis, you're in Gainesville, Georgia, and Gainesville, your WDUN is actually part of the Atlanta market, right? Even though you're about
15. Well, yeah, I mean, more or less, yes.
Yeah. You have it's a clear channel signal, is it?
Yes, we do during the day.
Yeah. So, right. So they hear you in Atlanta, right?
Right.
Yeah. And of course they listen, because you're wonderful. You know that.
Thank you.
Okay. So, now I lost my train of thought because I'm 68 years old. It's really terrible. All right. The, Jesus. Okay. What were we talking about?
About in Atlanta, Minneapolis. I don't know where you were going with that.
Oh, right. So I'm in flyover country, you know, and I have to admit, I spent a lot of time in my life, and especially in New York and I lived in LA. I've spent quite a lot of my time in Washington, D.C. For what I do, I actually like being here. I think I get a different perspective of the country from all these other places. Do you feel that too, being in Georgia?
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, look, I didn't move to New York or L.A., and I probably would have gone farther in my career if I had, but I didn't do it because I had a family, and technology came along at the perfect time. I was one of the first people with a laptop. I was one of the first people, you know, with a BlackBerry. Remember those days?
Yeah.
And I would be able to be there for my children and do the show. And I had a great supportive family owned station that sometimes if my kid got sick while I was on the air, one of the salespeople would go and pick him up. I mean, it is just a really great opportunity. And I've been able to build this career from where I am. And I think it's better than being somebody from New York or LA, because we live in the real world where we got to make real decisions.
Right. And the other thing is, I mean, Martha, you're unique. If you went to New York or LA, you'd just be another talking head on another, you know, network cable channel. I mean, they're all alike. That's what bothers me, is you can they're completely replaceable. You can stick a B guy in there instead of A guy, and you get the same result, you know?
Absolutely. You know, there was one time that the one and only time in all the television appearances that I've done that I took the side that the host wanted me to take, and it was Bill O'Reilly. And at that time, the O'Reilly Factor was the number one show on cable news, and to be able to be on that show was a big step. And it was something to do with Haiti. I don't even remember what it is. All I remember is how awkward it was to have to take a position that I didn't really agree with in order to be on that show. And so I vowed to never do it again. And, you know, I give my own opinion. I don't listen to news all day. I read a lot. I try to make up my own mind. And I am, at the core of it, a conservative. And I come to it from a conservative perspective. But for example, like with what's going on with the Speaker of the House right now, we've got to get a speaker in there. And people who, whether it's Jim Jordan or somebody else, people who support whoever ends up getting to be speaker, if they do not understand that with a 4-seat majority, you are going to be negotiating with moderates and with Democrats to get things done, then they don't understand. And if they're going to throw out every speaker that negotiates, whether you like it or not, I didn't like everything Kevin McCarthy did, but I kind of believe, like, I think it was Chip Roy who ended up voting against him. But Chip Roy said, you don't throw out the coach in the fourth quarter. Okay. And so I think that we've got to understand that, yes, I want a very conservative speaker, but I also live in the real world where I know that that very conservative speaker has 4 votes to work with. Okay. Right. And so sometimes that means he's going to have to negotiate with people we don't like.
I totally agree with you. My basic opinion is that McCarthy did as good a job as anybody could have done under the circumstances. That's what I think. Also, there's just a matter of timing, too. It's like this is a – and I'm not even talking about this Israeli thing, even before this happened. This was not a good time to pull this sort of stunt. That's what I think, you know. And I understand – I have there's a regular guest I have on the show named Jeff Meyer, and he's really – you know, his thing is, well, Gates and that gang, they really want to get the budget under control, and he's made a really good point about the fact that it doesn't matter when you pull the Band-Aid off, it's going to hurt. But, you know, and he's right. He has a point. But the thing is, too, it's just like you have to take timing into account, and you're absolutely right. You got four-seat majority. You have to be realistic. And if you're going to be unrealistic, well, then it's bullshit. And then what are we doing?
Well, and you got Matt. I'm glad you mentioned Matt Gaetz. But he had a deal that was an 8% cut, and he got his 21 people to vote against it.
Yeah.
And then they went to – then he had to negotiate with Democrats to be able to get it done.
Right.
So it's like he set him up to fail, and then he did this recall, or whatever you call it, to vacate the seat. And it just was wrong. And Matt Gaetz has been very quiet in the last 2 weeks,
other than
sending out fundraising letters.
Right.
I think he realizes he made a big mistake. Now, Jim Jordan didn't get there again today. I like Jim Jordan. He's from Ohio. I think he runs a great committee. He's a very conservative guy. But Jim Jordan fans, he's not going to be able to be as conservative if he gets to be the speaker, because he's got a 4-seat majority. That's it.
Yeah. There's also another thing I consider, too, and that is He's the head of the oversight committee right now, and he's really, really good at this. And I hate to say this because this happens to people all the time. If you promote him, whoever's going to take that seat is not going to do as good a job as he did. So it's like, I don't like kind of like the idea of moving him, even though it's like, it is like, you know, it's a kind of quote unquote a promotion, but still, you know, I don't know.
The shoulda, coulda, woulda. I mean, you know, in Georgia, Doug Collins stepped out to run for Senate and he's no longer in the Congress. He would have been a very good speaker candidate had he stayed in the Congress. But, you know, there's all that, the shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Okay. You're in Georgia. Brian Kemp is the governor of Georgia. Kemp and Trump don't get along. That seems pretty obvious. You know, Trump has always been, his thing is that, well, the 2020 election was fixed. And I basically agree, but I don't think it was fixed in Georgia. Do you know, have any insight on this at all?
I don't think it was fixed. I think that it was a perfect storm of a whole bunch of poll workers that were afraid to go to the polls. This is what we had in Georgia. We had mostly elderly poll workers. This was the height of COVID. They were afraid to work. So we had a whole bunch of new poll workers. We had new machines. And we went from 3% to 30% absentee ballots. So it was this perfect storm of everything that was going on. But I do think that our elections are messy. You can go back. I mean, I'm a geek when it comes to this. The 1896 election was questioned. The 1919 election was questioned.
I don't think you were alive then. Question.
We have had elections. This is not unique. What happened?
Yes, that's true.
It's
that's
just
true.
The most that it's what we remember in our lifetime.
Right.
Okay?
Correct.
But ironically, the last time this happened in 2000, we ended up with a terrorist attack 8 or 9 months later because our eye was off the ball because we were fighting about the election. Now we did the same thing in 2020, and we had the terrible withdrawal from Afghanistan, and now we had an attack on Israel that was a terrorist attack.
Martha,
when we take our eye off the ball, freedom-loving people, then bad things happen.
You're brilliant. I never put that together. I didn't. You're absolutely right. That's absolutely true. And I just want to, for brevity, I said rigged. I don't think there was any, like, well, I shouldn't say this. I do think there was some actual cheating regarding the vote count in certain places. But as a general rule, it was rigged in the sense that the rules were changed obsessively because of COVID. In many cases, illegally. There's at least 20.
No, it's 12, true.
At least 17 states where the unconstitutional.
They used emergency health care rules to do things.
Right, and they weren't authorized to do that. And so, yeah, it was a perfect storm for them to be able to do. You know, to and then COVID was bullshit, but whatever. And you know, the wonderful thing about what I do here, Martha, is I can swear.
No.
Yes, alone.
I'm still always thinking about the AC.
Say again? What was that?
I'm always thinking about the FCC.
Yeah. I don't have to. I don't have to do that. And I don't. All right. You started at WDUN as you got your original gig as calling in, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So how did that happen? And when was this?
I was calling in, and the guys that ran the station thought it was interesting that I had been a Democrat and now, you know, that worked on Dukakis's campaign, and now I was a Republican. And so they invited me in to do a little local segment. People liked me, and I started doing more and more and more. And then I left WDUN and went to Cox Radio. And then from there, I went on and worked for a senator and a governor. So anyway.
Hey, have you ever wondered about this? And you, as far as I can tell, I've looked and looked. Nobody's ever done a survey on this. I'd really be curious to know how many conservatives are former liberals. I think at least half.
Oh, a lot in the South. A lot in the South.
Uh-huh. I think just basically everywhere. I think because it seems like when we grow up, children are naturally liberal, which is one of the reasons the Democrats are trying to push the voting age earlier and earlier. That's one of the reasons. And some people grow out of it and some don't. And there you go. You know, I don't know. That's my theory. I'm sticking to it. So, you went, what station did you go to after you had your little call-in escapade?
Hold on. I got to answer this one text message. Sorry
okay,
about
no
that.
No problem. I'll dance here. I did put pants on.
So what was it? Ask me the question again.
I said, what station did you go to after WDUN?
I went to Cox Media Group, and it was WXKT. It was a station that they were testing out the FM signal with. So then I left there to run for Congress. And after I lost my congressional race, I went to work for Senator Perdue on his first election, and then Governor Kemp in his first election. And you know, Donald Trump thinks that he got Brian Kemp elected. In fact, he did help with the primary, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. In the general, we only won by 50,000 votes, okay? But in his reelection, like DeSantis and Kemp did better without Donald Trump in their reelection than they did in their initial election. So look, the governor has said he will vote for Donald Trump, and he will, because his one and single goal in 2024 is to prove that Georgia is not a purple state. Okay, yeah. That's what his single goal is. He's raising money. He's campaigning all around. He doesn't have an election. But he's campaigning, and he is trying to get the vote out. And Kelly Loeffler, what I love about what our people did here in Georgia is they did not take their ball and go home. They have invested in getting the vote out and showing that we are a conservative state. And our 2022 election was very conservative.
Martha, I don't know a single person who's a Trump supporter, and I count myself, I'm a Trump supporter, that doesn't think Donald talks smack a lot of the time. I mean, the shit that comes out of his mouth, and you referenced it earlier, and I find this really interesting, because I think the single worst thing Donald Trump said in the entire 2016 campaign is that John McCain is a loser. And I swear to God, Trump lays in bed at night staring at the ceiling and says, why the hell did I say that? Because it ended up costing him the whole Obamacare vote, you know? It's like it came back to bite him in the ass. Not only that, it was a really, really rude thing to say. The guy spent 5 years in a prisoner of war camp. I mean, shit, it was awful.
And you may not agree with him. You may not agree with him. But not only that, because he was an admiral's son, they offered to let him go early. And
that's
he
right.
said no.
He said
and
no.
Yes. I mean, he's an honorable person. He was an honorable person. And it was just wrong, especially coming from a guy that didn't serve. Okay. You know, it's, and not that I'm not against anybody that doesn't serve. Okay. But when you are up against someone who did serve and not only served, but was a POW for 5.5 years, you need to be a little more reverent. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's true. I totally agree with you. And you were talking about before about how Trump, and you know, that thing about Trump saying, I can't stop. Now, that's like you said, the honesty about that's really cool. It really is. But he can't, and so he can't stop, and half the shit that comes out of his mouth is just crap. I mean, you have to let it go. But on the whole, it's worked for him. On the whole.
It
I mean,
has.
The McCain thing is like the worst example of not working. But, you know, Trump is he's an entrepreneur. The way entrepreneurs think is you keep doing something and it keeps working, you know, and until
Look,
it doesn't work, and then you stop.
And I've got to wrap up. I'm sorry, Jim.
Yeah, no, I know. I know you
at
do.
My door. But let me tell you, he is a real estate guy, which means he doesn't mind leveraging. You know, that's how real estate people do. So I don't have a problem, but he did. If you're a debt guy, he got us more debt than Obama did. I mean, the one thing he never talks about is the budget. Okay. And so what I'd like to see from him, if he ends up being the nominee, is don't just talk about cutting taxes, talk about how you're going to get this budget under control. And then you might win back somebody like me.
Yeah. I always assumed he would address that in a second term, but it's true in the campaign, he never did address it. I'm going to let you go, Martha. I really appreciate you being on. I hope you join us again.
Thank you. And it's MarthaZoller.com for everything Martha Zoller.
I'm going to put links up to all your stuff on our blog. So
thank you very much. It was great to talk to you.
Yeah, you take care. We'll see you soon. Martha Zoller, the midday host at WDUN Gainesville, Atlanta. Wonderful woman. In my generation, when I was younger, that we would refer to her as a pistol. But I'm an old fart. So, just saying that just made me think of this. A friend of mine said that, well, your gig is kind of like Tom Snyder. Now, you watching this, dear viewer, you probably don't remember or know who Tom Snyder is. Tom Snyder hosted a show on NBC after The Tonight Show in Oh, God. It would have been 1982, because that's when Letterman started. It was in the 70s. It might have been 72, 74, called Tomorrow. The show was done without an audience, and it was basically, and it was kind of a lot like this show. Snyder would do a monologue to the camera, no audience, although he would make jokes and his crew would laugh. And then he would interview people. It was simple, really. But the guy was, I don't know, you can watch clips on YouTube. He was kind of idiosyncratic. That's a better way to put it. And yes, I am aware of the fact that I am kind of like him. You know, my friend said, well, you should call yourself Tom Snyder Jr. Maybe I should. And my friend also looked. He said Tom Snyder would be 89 years old if he was alive now. I'm not quite 89. Anyway, thanks to Martha for joining us there. I do hope she comes back. I'd like to see her. I mean, needless to say, it helps if you're a talk show host if you have no trouble talking. It does. Okay, so part three. Now it's part three. And now we're going to go on to paranormal news. And this is what we got. I got two things here. Here's a headline from Breitbart. AI runs amok. Researchers discovered that ChatGPT can figure out everything about you from simple conversations. Yeah, this is making the rounds here, and it's very true. Supposedly, you talk to ChatGPT, and it will ask you, like, just simple social conversation BS, like, what's the weather like, and how are you feeling, that sort of thing. And it can end up surmising an enormous amount of stuff about you. And this just made sense. I pasted this into my show notes. Since then, in the last 12 hours, article, I can't remember where I saw it, about the fact that Facebook is going to be using ChatGPT for this very reason, to target advertising. And you have to understand this. This is the reason, actually, the reason I'm bringing this up. Facebook doesn't need any help. Facebook is the best advertising medium ever devised. Why? Because you give Facebook all your freaking data. That's why. You do it. You do it voluntarily. You know, what's your favorite movies? What's your favorite TV shows? What's your favorite albums? You know, and you talk about that, and you put it in your profile, and now Facebook knows every fucking thing about you. It's like they're the last people that actually need this. So the fact they're going to be using it, they're just going to refine this even more. I mean, Facebook can already surmise, like, just by your entertainment preferences, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, they can guess with uncanny skill, with data that has nothing to do with politics. It's really amazing. This gets back to the thing about Eddie Scarry being on the show next Tuesday. That's what his book is about. It's called Liberal Misery, and it's about the fact that he surmised, as I do too, that the difference between Democrats and Republicans is not so much political, but it's personality. It's a personality type. You have two distinct personality types. And yeah, and so ChatGPT can figure that shit out. And aren't you happy that you got all your crap on Facebook? Yeah, I would like to point out, I'm just some big freaking know-it-all here, but still, I will point this out, that other than this show, I have no data on social media whatsoever. You won't find me. I'm not around. Now, one of the reasons you won't find me is because I was on the internet, on the web, way, way before anybody else. If you go back 25, 27 years to the early 1990s, I was posting all over the place. But there were only in 1995, April of 1995 is when Yahoo moved from Stanford University to Yahoo.com. Before that, it was a Stanford University website. And I always measure or take that move in April of 1995 as the start of the commercial internet. It really wasn't, but if you got to draw a line somewhere, that's the best place to draw a line. In April 1995, there were about 400 or 500 commercial websites on the internet. Yeah, you heard me right, 500. Now there's billions, billions. Matter of fact, I think I heard a statistic. There's 500 million new websites added every day or something like that. You know? Unbelievable. But, yeah, but you won't find me. Our show is a whole bunch of places. I mean, there's a Twitter feed for our show, and our show automatically, not only does it get posted there, it runs live there. You know, there's 7 different places the show runs live. Plus, Spreaker Audio, where the audio runs live, audio only runs live. There's that too. So yeah, but myself personally, I don't post, and I don't post it on our show timelines either. I do not post. I've been thinking about doing it. I don't know, like I need another thing to do, you know. And my friend says to me, "My God, that's a really tough job you have. You know, you're working like four or five hours a day." Yeah, it's true. All right, so I got one more thing. I should have brought this up too. You can call me now. You know, if you want to call me, Geminite.com/call. You can leave a text or voicemail. You call 408-458-5088. 408-458-5088. You can remember that in your sleep. So you can either text me at that number, or you can call and leave a 30-second voicemail. And I think I figured out how to deal with these voicemails. I think I have. I was talking last night about the fact that so far I don't, because everything on the frickin' web is geared toward video, and this is a video show, I've not really figured out how to upload the audio only, but I think I figured it out today. So I'm going to work on that this weekend, so maybe I'll have some audio to play for you on Monday. Okay, so second thing in our paranormal news is, I'm going to just read this. This is from mysteriousuniverse.org. UFO researcher Jeremy Corbell, famous guy, you've seen him on all these shows, said that many military personnel have seen UFOs, often report that the ship's exterior appeared to display signs of both intelligence and vivacity, as if it were a living skin. Corbell thinks these ships may be so integrated with biological elements that they could be a different life form, where the distinction between machine and biological entity is blurred, thus requiring the use of caution when dealing with what could be a cybernetic organism functioning as an autonomous AI being. Now, that was kind of a little bit of jargon in there, but the point is there's a lot of people who've seen the UFOs who actually think just to sum that up in a sentence, they think the UFO itself, the actual machine, is actually alive. That's what they think. Now, you think about this. If you were able to, if you have 100 or 1 million years of technology on us, that's probably simple. You know, I just get back to the fact I pointed this out a couple nights ago. We've only had electricity for 150 years. You've only had your iPhone for 16, 17 years. We've only had computers for all practical purposes since the 1980s for 40 years. So just, you know, give us even 200 years, and it's amazing what we're going to be able to do. It's just amazing. I've said this, made this prediction. I won't live to see it unless I live as long as my mother. So maybe I will. I don't know. My mother's 99 and still alive. She was on the show last week. That we will be flying faster than the speed of light by the end of the century. That's my prediction. Now, it's interesting. I was talking about the fact that I thought Star Wars was bullshit in the Star Trek universe. Not Star Wars, Star Trek. In the Star Trek universe, what's the guy's name? It was Pike. Not Zebulon Pike, but was that his name? Now, that's the name of a real explorer, I think. But at any rate, Pike was the first person on Earth to fly faster than the speed of light. He did it in 2050 in the timeline of that show. And I think we might end up to being around that. I think that might happen. You know, I pointed us out the other night, day too, and that is when, what's the name of the guy who flew faster than the speed of sound? Chuck Yeager. Yeah, Chuck Yeager. When he did that, they weren't certain, and when I mean they, I'm talking about scientists, everybody, weren't even certain it would be possible. There are a lot of people who thought, well, your ship will break up. Your plane will break up before you pass the speed of sound. And the amazing thing is that several people tried it before Yeager. That's exactly what happened. So, and Yeager barely busted it. Now, the thing is, and if you're in an airplane and you bust the sound barrier, a whole bunch of shit happens on both the inside and the outside. It's very obvious when you do this, if you're flying in the airplane, in the craft. So he knew he did, and the thing is, he barely did it. So, you know, he just cracked the sound barrier, and then he pulled back for the first time. But several people died trying. So, you know, you think things are impossible. No, things aren't impossible. The other thing about flying faster than the speed of light is that we know how to do it. I've said that before. Theoretically, we've already figured it out. The problem is it takes an enormous, enormous amount of energy. That's the problem. What I've heard that even a small two-seater aircraft that's like maybe 30 feet in diameter, even that, you need more electricity than is generated on the entire planet to fly faster than the speed of light. So, and so you're wondering, well, Jim, we're never going to have that type of power. Yeah, we'll have it. We'll have it. You know, now, but Robert Lazar, the guy who originally said he worked at Area 51 on the UFOs, this is back in 1989. You can find this on YouTube if you're looking. There, in 1992, well, he didn't. They posted 92 because YouTube didn't exist. He made, but 92, he made a video. It's standard def. It looks terrible, you know, but it's posted on YouTube. At least the last time I checked, it was explaining how the propulsion systems of these aircraft, of these spacecraft, worked. And at the time, he was vilified by the physics community. They said, well, this is all bullshit. You know, even Stan Friedman, who was, died a couple, few years ago, who was for many years certainly the premier UFO researcher on the planet, partly because he was a working nuclear physicist. Yeah, the guy actually, he worked for the government. And I'm assuming, I mean, I always wanted to meet the guy because I wanted to ask him this. What, you know, I'm assuming he knew more shit than he could actually say. I mean, people who have security clearances are very good at skirting around the actual stuff they can't say. You know, Luis Elizondo, the guy who ran ATIP, he's been doing that. I mean, he's basically come right to the line and said the extraterrestrials are real, but he's never actually said it. Because if he says it, he can go to prison. Well, that's the assumption anyway. He's talked about his security clearance. And Friedman mentioned the fact he had them, but he never actually addressed that per se. I just wanted to ask him, do you know more than you've let on? You know, you don't have to tell me the details. Just answer that question. I'm assuming the answer was yes. But at any rate, even he thought Lazar was a fraud because Friedman himself was a nuclear physicist. And Lazar claimed, and still does, to be a nuclear physicist. And he said the stuff that Lazar was talking about was bullshit. Problem. So what Lazar explains in that video is that these spacecraft ran, their actual fuel was an element called 115, element 115 on the periodic table, which in 1989 or 92, when he made the video, did not exist. We did not have that element. And the weird thing about things on the periodic table is the farther up the numbers you go on the periodic table, the more unstable elements become. But Lazar said the thing about 115 that the ETs apparently figured out is that unlike all the other stuff on that area of the table, it's actually stable. And that was the reason they could use it. Now, I think they discovered element 115 in 2005, if I'm right, and its name now is called Muscovium. That's what it's named, Muscovium. But it has the exact properties Lazar said it did. And that's the real amazing thing. How would he know? Because you can't really, from its location on the periodic table, you can't really, you could generalize, but you wouldn't generalize what he said. Because the generalizations, if you were going to guess, that's not what you would guess. That's the thing. That's one part of it. So he says that this, the engine for these things is about the size of a washing machine, he said, basically, or a very large microwave oven. And it works because they take element 115 and they turn it into element 116 and then they run antimatter through that element. Now, we can't even do that. We know what antimatter is. That's it. We can't, I think in at CERN or something, maybe they've bothered to make a few molecules of it or something like that. But for all practical purposes, we're not even close to being able to do that shit. But he said this small device was, and the thing is, and antimatter, you think a nuclear bomb is powerful? Antimatter is like nuts. You can blow up the universe. And so he said it was contained in this machine that was, and the machine had to be perfectly spheroid on the inside to contain the reaction. And what happened is they would basically pair matter and antimatter one molecule at a time. And that was enough to create a ridiculous amount of electricity. And here's the, and you know, this is the problem, and I'm not the only person who talked about this. Dolan, the author, he's talked about this all the time. This is the crime of the whole UFO phenomena. If that's real, if what Lazar said is real, we could power the whole planet off something like this and forever with no pollution whatsoever. That's the actual real problem here. These people, when I'm talking about these people, I'm talking about clandestine members of the military, and there probably aren't a lot of them. You know, the thing is, you know, everyone talks about, well, the government. Well, I'll tell you, the government, there's 4 million people in the United States who work for the federal government, and that's not even including the military. These are civilians. I was just reading about, this was in the show rundown for tonight. I never got around to it in the first part, about the fact that the Department of Health and Human Services is now mandating that everybody use their personal pronouns, because they want to make certain everybody feels, oh, geez, let me read this for you. It's just such a stupid shit. It's like, here, this is Andrea Palm, the Secretary of Health and Human Services. So she's a cabinet member person. She said, I want to say clearly to every one of you, who you are and who you know yourself to be is valid. We want you to be your authentic self every day, regardless of your gender identity, sexual orientation, race, ethnicity, religion, or disability status. And now, first of all, I had a thought here. Do you have to do the pronoun thing? If you don't do it, does that mean you hate these people? No, it doesn't. Just ignore it. There's nothing. If a guy's going to come to work dressed in a dress, as long as he does a job, okay, fine. My problem with the transgender people is this whole thing about sports. That's clearly unfair. If you're a man, if you're a woman with a penis, you have no business running in a race or a swim meet or a basketball game with women without penises. You have no business being there. And that's because of the way the male and human biological bodies are built. That's the reason. But if you're any other job, I don't care. I don't give a crap, you know? But the thing is, the thing was buried in this story, and I have to say, so I did last night's show. I taped the Gutfeld show. I did go grocery shopping last night. I got home about midnight, 12:30, and I put the Gutfeld show on, and they talked about this, and Kat Timpf, bless her heart, brought up the same thing I was going to bring up. Buried in this story is the fact that the Department of Health and Human Services has 80,000 employees. Did you hear me? 80,000. You know, so you were talking about, we talk about the quote-unquote the government. The government is fucking enormous. It's huge. But the thing is, when it comes to this clandestine UFO shit, there's a possibility that only a couple hundred people are glued into this. There is. You know, they're in some black budget project somewhere, buried. You know, so you're talking about maybe 200 people who actually know the keys to powering the fucking universe, and they're not releasing it. That's actually the real problem with this whole thing. If this science is real, we can leapfrog generations of human suffering, and actually just crap, and I'm going to crap in the form of pollution. You know, I don't buy climate change per se. I don't buy it. But the thing is, you know, the kernel of truth in climate change is everybody wants a cleaner planet. You know, CO2 is not pollution. We've had Patrick Moore on the show, most esteemed scientist, him and Michael Schellenberger and the guy who, the Nobel Prize winner, was his name, Carruthers, is it? They're the most famous three scientists in America talking about this and about the fact that climate change is bullshit and the fact that especially CO2 is not pollution. Not only is it not pollution, basically, the more of it we have on the planet, the better, basically. But the pollution doesn't exist, and nobody wants pollution. I don't want dirty air. I don't want it, you know? So if, you know, and of course, you know, people say, well, you know, solar panels. Yeah, solar panels, okay. You know, Jeff Myers was talking about the fact that the crap you need to make solar panels is actually kind of disgusting. It is. That's not a pollution-free thing there, totally. The windmills, that's complete crap, total crap. You're not going to generate enough electricity to counter all the millions of birds that get killed and all the inefficiencies of these stupid machines turning around. It's like, we're in the Netherlands in 1600. It's bullshit. But, you know, I don't want pollution. I don't. You have a coal plant, it's pollution. They talk about clean coal. Clean coal is basically bullshit. It basically doesn't exist. You know, they cleaned it up a little bit, nothing major. But, you know, I don't want pollution. So if you could power like every home on Earth with a reactor basically the size of a washing machine, oh fuck. You know, sign us up. And it wouldn't cost, you know, it's so cost efficient, nobody would basically have to pay for it, you know? And that's folks, ladies and germs, that's the real crime of the whole UFO phenomena. That right there. That we might actually have this technology, somebody sitting in some warehouse or some lab somewhere, and 200 people know about it. And Dolan's been writing about this for years. He says the same thing. It's a secret society. There's a small group of people. He has estimated between 200 and 5,000. Yeah, it's probably right. I don't know what it would be in that range, but probably not more than 5,000 people who are basically living 200 years ahead of the rest of us. And they're not releasing it for all sorts of reasons. They don't think they should. The government doesn't want them to, you know. So at any rate, I'm just backtracking that whole thing with Lazar. And that is nothing Lazar has said in that 1992 video has been proven to be false. Nothing. And so you do wonder, did this guy actually did know this shit? You know, I've always been convinced that he did. The thing about Lazar, people said, well, people have he graduated from Cal Poly and that sort of stuff. People went to the two schools he went to, I can't remember the last one, where he got his physics degrees, and said there's no record of him being there. But George Knapp, the guy, the KLAS television reporter who found Lazar in the first place, he said he's talked to a bunch of people that went to school with Lazar and said, oh yeah, he was there. He was in class, you know. It does seem that the government, who the fuck knows which part, is really good at erasing people's academic credentials if they have to. It does seem like that. So I believe Knapp, and I guess I believe Lazar. I think more and more every day, more and more people are saying that maybe there was something to this. I mean, when he came out with this stuff in the late 90s and early, or eight, late 80s and early 90s, there's a whole bunch of people who say he's just a crock, you know, he's a crackpot. But no, I'm starting to think that maybe he isn't. Let me tell you one other thing. We'll end with this too. You know what else is I think may be real that for the longest time even I didn't think so, is that alien autopsy tape they showed in the late 1990s on Fox broadcast. You know, I don't know if you ever saw that. So it's a tape. Apparently, a guy named Ray Santilli said that a photographer who worked for the federal government sent him this film of this alien autopsy. Now, this has been so convoluted since then. What Santilli says now is that the film he gave Fox was not the actual film he was given. He said he watched that film once and it literally disintegrated in the film machine, in the projection machine, as it was going through. It was so old and brittle. And that does happen. I mean, I know that. It's like, I know that even audio tape, I'm mostly an audio guy. I know that there's what's a good example of this? I think it was the Beach Boys, Good Vibrations. The tape was so bad, they could only run it through this machine one single time before they digitized it, because it literally disintegrated. The recording, the playback machine literally peeled the iron oxide off of the tape as it went through. So they had one chance to do it, and they got it, I guess. But still, you know, that's pressure. Yeah, don't fuck this up. But anyway, so that's Santilli said that's what happened. He said he watched the film, and it literally disintegrated in the process of watching it. So they took what very little was left, and he said they recreated it based on what he saw watching it and the very few frames left that actually worked, that didn't disintegrate. And he said they recreated it. And the people, what he gave Fox was not the real film, but a recreation of it. And here's the problem with that. At first, and I gotta admit, first I thought this. The first time I saw this film, I thought it was totally fake. I thought, because also the way the camera angles cut in and out, it's like, I mean, I know this shit, you know? It just didn't make any sense. And then I watched it a couple times since then, you know, in the last 20, 25 years. And something occurred to me, and I'm not the only person that's thought of this too, that to create what's on that film would have cost somebody a shitload of money. A shitload. I don't think you could make that film. That film was like 20 minutes long. I don't think you could make that film now for less than $500,000. I'm probably pushing $1 million. Because this has been checked out. There's people who have done enormous, ridiculous, like, obsessive research on this. Every single thing in the scene on the screen in that film is period accurate. Every single thing. There were people who thought that maybe there was a clock on a wall that wasn't. Turned out they were wrong. Somebody tracked it down. It's like every single thing in that is period accurate to 1947. Every single thing. So, you know, in Mad Men, that took place in the 1960s, they had somebody on staff whose full-time job was just to make absolutely certain that everything that appeared on screen was historically accurate. That was this person's job. They probably had a department. And then you have to track this shit down, and you have to find it. Santilli, you know, Santilli says he actually filmed that in his apartment. That's bullshit. Now, what's come out since then, and this was actually just really released recently, the film he actually did film in his apartment has been released, and it's hilariously bad. It's comical. It's laughably awful. Because, yeah, it looks like somebody filmed a science fiction movie in somebody's apartment. That's what it looks like. And you think that. But to create that film, okay, so, you know, and also this kind of gets back to, you know, the thing, like the whole thing about JFK, the JFK assassination. There's the two famous pictures of Lee Harvey Oswald holding up both his rifle and a newspaper, you know, which has a date on it. And, of course, that's the, you know, if you want to prove somebody's been at a certain place and time, that's the obvious way you used to do it, you know, so I'm a suspect right there. But it's been proven now that those pictures are fake. That there wasn't until digital analysis came along that anyone could do that. So, but like I said, it wasn't until relatively recently, the last few years, that those. So, okay, so somebody faked those pictures. Do you know in 1963 how hard it was to fake photographs? You basically needed a movie studio to do it. They could do it because that was literally their job. So, who else had the power to do that? The government. And that's it. You got movie studios or the government. That's about the only two people, two entities that could afford to do that sort of shit. It was extremely difficult, and you had to have a lot of expertise other than, like, your stupid double exposure, other than that, you know. And not only that, they found, in searching the Dallas Police Department files, they actually found the background picture that was used to make the composites. In other words, the picture is just of that scene of the background of the stairs of the apartment and that sort of thing. So nobody's standing in it. They found that shot that they used to overlay the pictures of Oswald. And they weren't Oswald. You know, Oswald said this. He said, well, that looks like my face, but I wasn't there. You know, and that's exactly what it is. They have found somebody pasted Oswald's face or a photo of Oswald on somebody else's body. That's what it was. So you get back to that, and I brought this up for a reason. I have reasons. I talk endlessly, and I have reasons for doing so. That, yeah, back to the Santilli film, who could afford to do that, especially as a joke? You know, you're going to spend $500,000, $1 million to mercilessly, intricately recreate something like to run on TV. Now, you could make an argument, okay, they made a lot of money showing that on Fox in 1996. They did. But they didn't know that was. I don't think anybody would risk $1 million, and you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know whether people are going to watch. You know, it would be $1 million bet, and yeah, you could. And I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see it happening. It's too good. In other words, you know. And I can even talk all that shit. You know, one of my complaints about that film is that when they start to do close-ups of the inside of the body during the autopsy, that the film, or temporarily the camera, blurs out. And then, but it was explained to me later that the cameras they used in 1947, and you've seen them before, were the ones with multiple lenses that rotate, and so they would have to rotate the lenses to get the right lens to do for the close-up, and that's why that blurry shot is there. And that makes sense. At first I thought, oh, that's how they're covering up the splicing here, you know? But no, so they had to spin the lenses around to get the right lens to do a close-up. It's like, I don't know. It's like the whole thing. You know, but, you know, it's basically, this is the world. The world, here's the world, folks. Follow the money. You know, that's how you're going to get, you want to figure out anything, follow the money. Joe Biden has been getting millions of dollars from some of our adversaries, and Hunter Biden has arranged for it. You know, I mean, at this point, they've proved it, if you ask me. I don't think, you know, we don't have anything going directly into Joe's bank account. No, you don't. You don't. But you do have money going directly into his grandkids' bank account, and that's enough. That's okay. That proves it. You know, because who's doing that? No one's hiring 10-year-old kids to work for China. Nobody. You know, why are they getting the money? So, anyway, that's the story of the world, folks. Follow the money. And I'm going to leave you with that tonight. So, on Monday, Larry Newman's here. Tuesday, Eddie Scarry. Wednesday, Jeff Meyer. Thursday, I think we have a guest. I'll confirm that. If you go to our blog at jimandnight.com, on the bottom of the front page, we list our upcoming guests and also the latest blog posts we have. Now, we'll be posting Martha Zoller's stuff on the blog, link to her website and her show page at WDUN and that sort of stuff. We'll do that. We do that for all our guests. God, I almost pulled a swallow there. What the hell was I thinking? I want to thank you for watching and listening. And like I said, someday we'll come up with a name for this. I was talking to Michael Harrison of Doctors Magazine a few weeks ago, and I said the best name I've come up to with kind of show is, it's a vodcast. VOD is a video on demand, even though it's live, but still, as opposed to a podcast. It's certainly not a podcast. But anyway, well, thank you for watching very much. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. I'll see you. We're taking off tomorrow. We're off tomorrow, Thursday. I'll see you on Monday. You guys have a nice long weekend. Here's the end card.